Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Richard J. Daley was the boss of Chicago, a 20th century urban icon. His son, Mayor Richard M. Daley, has been the builder of Chicago. If you've been lately, you can't miss the show place face on the shore of Lake Michigan. Now, Mayor-elect Rahm Emanuel is set to take over. In the era of austerity, they've called Chicago the city that works, so how will American cities work now? This hour on Point, Rahm Emanuel's Chicago. You can join the conversation. Is this a great time to be a city, an impossible time? Do you see why Rahm Emanuel so wanted to be mayor of Chicago? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear in a moment from our friend Laura Washington at the Chicago Sun-Times, but joining me first today is Larry Bennett, professor of political science at Chicago's DePaul University. His new book, The Third City, Chicago and American Urbanism, it describes the rise of 21st century Chicago. Larry Bennett, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. I'm glad to be with you.
So you take us on a quick tour of Chicago's history here. You say a lot of people are still stuck in their comprehension, their understanding of Chicago, a generation back or a version back or two versions back. Where's Chicago been, and where do you see it pointing now, Larry?
Well, I think that Chicago is one of the emblematic American cities of the 21st century. It's a place which has a rich history and a very rich literature, which is one of the topics that I take up in my book. And what I try to do is draw connections between the past and the present, but also argue that there's a lot going on in contemporary Chicago that people just haven't recognized yet.
You call it the amenities-rich neo-romantic metropolis today. What does that mean?
Well, it's amenities-rich in the sense that over the last 20 years, there's been a tremendous amount of both public investment and private investment in infrastructure in the downtown area, tremendous proliferation of arts facilities and arts companies, a tremendous amount of gentrification, and basically a thorough transformation of Chicago's national and international image.
What's the mythology or baggage, history, that people still tend to see when they say Chicago, that you say is the wrong lens now?
Well, it's history. It is iconic mythology. It is the story of Carl Sandburg's Chicago, the city of broad shoulders, the hog butcher to the world. It is the story of a city which, during the middle part and the latter decades of the 20th century, underwent tremendous crises in terms of its economy, in terms of race relations, a city that many Americans probably most think of in terms of maybe the student anti-war demonstrations at the 1968 Democratic Convention, or the figure of Richard J. Daley, who was probably the most famous mayor of a big city in the United States during the 20th century. All of this is relevant to contemporary Chicago. Our mayor, who is now exiting, Richard M. Daley, is, of course, the son of Richard J. Daley. In many respects, Chicago continues to attract attention to itself by playing on its history. But as I try to point out in the book, Richard M. Daley is much to be understood by looking at other mayors of major U.S. cities like Michael Bloomberg or Rudolph Giuliani before him in New York City. Chicago is a place that has a tremendous local history and local image, but it's also a city that's in the world now.
We're going to dig into the details, but help us understand this big framework that you see having emerged here. You write in The Third City, and we need you to explain that to us, too. A.J. Liebling, of course, famously tweaked it as the second city after New York. But you say that the Chicago in the making today is a prototype of successful urban reinvention. It also, if you look at Chicago, you say it lets us consider what metropolitan life across North America may well look like in the coming decades. What's that emerging prototype?
Well, I think the emerging prototype is a type of city that over the longer course of American history we really hadn't anticipated. We've tended to think of cities as places that produce things and particularly produce physical objects. So in the long run of Chicago's history, it is a place in which steel has been manufactured, in which there was a tremendous amount of meat packing, a place in which there were a variety of consumer products that were manufactured up until about the 1970s or the 1980s. And one of the points that I make about the emergent Chicago, and this is something that draws on the work of many contemporary observers and social scientists, is that cities are increasingly becoming places of consumption, places where people live to take advantage of the amenities, places in which the economy to a considerable degree is run on the basis of attracting visitors for relatively short periods of time. And to the degree that Chicago is a production site these days, it's often a production site of non-tangible things. We have our commodities exchanges. We have a powerful array of public relations and accounting firms that work in business services. It's increasingly a city in which, to the degree there is production, it is not physical production in the traditional sense.
How's that working for Chicago's economy?
Well, it works in ways that are both advantageous and disadvantageous. Chicago has an economy that has made a shift away from a largely industrial base. That has certain kinds of environmental advantages. Chicago smells a lot better now than it did 50 years ago, for example. On the other hand, Chicago is a city which has a hourglass economy from the standpoint of incomes. There is a fraction of the population that does extremely well and is able to take advantage of these amenities that I talk about in the book. But there's also a huge working class and poor population of individuals who mainly are in service sector jobs. Wages are relatively low. Jobs are often temporary. Pension and benefits are not particularly good. And in that regard, Chicago is similar to Los Angeles, New York, London, Paris. It's not a trend that I think is particularly desirable in the long run.
Rahm Emanuel will be coming in many ways into the house, the city that Richard M. Daley built. What has the current mayor's vision for the city? Where's been the thrust of his Chicago building?
Well, I think that that Richard M. Daley is one of the prime architects of the new or emergent image of Chicago. I think that that Mayor Daley had a sense that Chicago had a role in the global economy. I think that when he first came in as mayor right at the end of the 1980s, he probably underestimated the degree that there could continue to be a industrial component to the local economy. I think he has come to realize that a balanced economy is desirable. But the thing that he has really attempted to do is to play up an image of Chicago as a iconic modern city, which includes the architecture of Louis Sullivan and Frank Lloyd Wright, and that kind of modernistic Chicago. That's part of what I call the second city of the mid-20th century, is something that can be built on in terms of attracting people who are interested in the history of Chicago, the history of cities, that are interested in architecture and city planning. And I think that one of the ways in which Daley has been particularly astute is thinking about the physical improvement of Chicago's appearance. I myself came to Chicago in the late 1970s, and I have to say Chicago was a very bedraggled metropolis at that time. In the latter years of the Richard J. Daley administration, there were pretty significant physical problems. Richard J. Daley himself, I think, had lost some of his sharpness as a political leader over the last 5 to 10 years of his mayoralty. One of the undesirable consequences of the long-standing domination of city government by the Democratic Party is that you had a lot of people in city government who were not particularly, let's say, ingenious. They were people who had proved themselves through loyalty. And from the standpoint of city services, from the standpoint of city planning, even from the standpoint of imagining what Chicago could be, there wasn't a tremendous amount of originality. And once you got outside of the loop in 1978 or 1980, you were walking around in a city that looked to be in pretty bad shape.
Of course, you can still find no small amount of that today. People in the neighborhood saying, we've got these amazing amenities now down on the lakefront and no streetlights on our block.
Well, and you're absolutely right about that. And as I was saying before, this hourglass economy in terms of the income structure is also reflected in a very polarized city from the standpoint of the physical condition, but also the social circumstances of neighborhoods across the city. If you fly into O'Hare Airport and you take the Blue Line down to the Loop and you visit your mother-in-law in Lincoln Park, you have traveled a route within Chicago in which you appear to be in a very prosperous,
wonderland.
very well-maintained yeah. city. On the other hand, if you drive into Chicago on the interstate highway coming in from Indiana, you drive across the decaying ruin of the old Southworks U.S. Steel Complex right along the lakefront. You drive into South Side neighborhoods, which have not benefited very much from the relative boom that the city experienced in the 1990s.
Where the Olympics were supposed to go, but will not after all. Larry Bennett, please stand by in Chicago. It's so good to have you. Larry Bennett, author of The Third City. Laura Washington joins us in a moment. We're talking about Rahm Emanuel's Chicago, the city he will inherit. Go out with little Kanye West here, Chicago native. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Rapping makes soul beats just like you, but they just not you. And I just got through talking about what trying to do, just not new. Now everybody got the game figured out all wrong. I guess you never know what you got till it's gone. I guess that's why I'm here and I can't come back home. And guess when I heard that, when I was back home. Every interview I'm representing you, making you proud. Reach for the stars, so if you fall, you land on a cloud, jump in the crowd, talking lighters, wave them around. If you don't know by now, I'm talking about Chi-Town. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Rahm Emanuel's Chicago, the city he will inherit as mayor-elect now, and what your city or town might learn from Chicago. Last week at the mayor-elect's victory party, Rahm Emanuel cautioned there was a lot of work ahead for Chicago.
Until that child can go to school thinking of their studies and not their safety, we haven't won anything. Yeah. Or until the parent of that child is thinking about their work and not where they're going to find work, we have not won anything.
Rahm Emanuel on election night, victory night for him. Of course, Richard M. Daley, sitting mayor, has been thinking very big. There's the street level. There's the global level. Chicago hosted Chinese President Hu Jintao in January after meeting President Obama in Washington, who headed out to Chicago. Mayor Daley had this to say during President Hu's visit.
Our long-range goal is to make Chicago the most China-friendly city in the United States and to establish it as China's gateway to America's. We want our relationship with China to grow even stronger.
The most China-friendly city in the United States. They're straight from the heartland. Larry Bennett has joined us from DePaul University. He's author of The Third City, Chicago and American Urbanism. You can read a great excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Joining us right now is Laura Washington, columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. Happens today to be in Miami, Florida, a long way from snowy Chicago. Laura Washington, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Great to be here, Tom. Thanks.
Can I just ask you first, Rahm Emanuel said very publicly, and of course it's campaigning, but it sounded like more than that, that to be mayor of Chicago was the thing that he aspired to above all other roles. Why would that be, Laura?
Well, he's a Chicagoan. It's interesting. There was a huge debate during the campaign about whether he was a true Chicagoan. His opponents
a legal Chicagoan.
There was a whole issue about his residency that ended up in a course and went all the way up to the state Supreme Court. But he was born in Chicago. He grew up in the northern suburbs of Chicago. He was a congressman in Chicago. He has spent the vast majority of his life, except for his couple very high-profile stints in Washington, as a Chicagoan. And so he's made it clear that that he saw this. I think at one point his next step in his career was to be the Speaker of the House. When he was still a congressman representing the North Side, that was a goal. But once Barack Obama became president and asked him to go with him to the White House, I think that's when he shifted gears and started to look at that next step being City Hall.
So he's a Chicago guy, and there's the top job in Chicago. But why that goal now? I mean, he's stepping into a situation with we've got deficits all over in this country, but he's looking at a $600 or $700 million deficit in the city of Chicago. This is not something that Richard M. Daley had to struggle with for most of his time there. He was in the easy money days. What is Rahm Emanuel inheriting here, Laura?
Well, he obviously likes a challenge, and I think that there are many parallels between his old boss, Barack Obama, and Rahm Emanuel. There are many troubling challenges for the city. As you said, there's a $600 million plus budget deficit. This current mayor, while he has been acclaimed as a very competent, successful mayor, has spent down virtually all the reserves that were available to balance this his most recent budget. So there's nowhere to go in terms of additional reserves. The schools continue to be troubled, especially in low-income communities. There's a growing charter school movement. There's a lot of trouble with the unions coming, especially the teachers union, which there's expectations there may be a strike later this year. There's, as Rahm Emanuel pointed out in that bite earlier, there's great fears about street crime. Even though crime overall is down, there's been a lot of high-profile shootings of school children, very troubling, and no jobs. As in every major American city, joblessness is rampant, and particularly, again, in the lower-income, working-class communities on the South and West Sides, the unemployment rates are 25% plus. So he's got a handful that he's inheriting here.
How do you see this tension, Laura? I mean, Larry Bennett is writing about Chicago as a potential model for all urban America in the 21st century. At the same time, he's looking at what he describes the neo-romantic metropolis, that kind of amazing skyline, all those amenities that are down there by the lakefront. Reading here in Newsweek, Ray Sokolov talks about Chicago as America's hottest city. So it's got a lot going on at that level, and yet there's the backside of the operation.
The city is Chicago has always been known as a city of neighborhoods, and has incredibly rich racial and ethnic diversity. There's hundreds of languages being spoken in Chicago, but with that comes that diversity comes trouble. There's this glittering facade that you and Professor Bennett have been speaking of, the downtown, but the neighborhoods are not seeing the economic development. They're not seeing the jobs. They're not seeing the same access to transportation. Chicago is known as the nation's capital for food deserts, communities that don't have access to healthy, fresh options, eating options in their grocery stores and their restaurants. So all of this is sort of the backdrop, the undercurrent to that glittering facade downtown. To Emanuel's credit, he has spoken very forthrightly about these challenges and these issues, but he hasn't really laid out an agenda or a game plan for how he intends to address them.
Larry Bennett, they're also in Chicago. Where do you see Chicago today as a model? Maybe where is it not a model in terms of other urban centers?
Well, before our break, you had mentioned the Chicago bid for the 2016 Olympics. Mm-hmm. And I think that effort exemplifies a lot of the contradictions in contemporary Chicago, in the sense that the bid, I think, primarily came out of the business and civic leadership of the city. Mayor Daley bought onto it and certainly became a tremendous advocate. And I think that from the standpoint of the sponsors, there was a sense that by locating a number of the venues in South Side neighborhoods and to a lesser degree on the West Side, that the Olympics were going to be some sort of engine for economic redevelopment of these areas.
The South and West Side being the most economically troubled areas of the city.
Yes, exactly. And the major Olympic Stadium was going to be in the Washington Park neighborhood on the South Side, for example. But the fact was that the outreach to these communities by the 2016 committee and by the Daley administration was not very good. People had a sense that they were being sold on a proposal that they were not really permitted to contribute to. And I think that there was a well-meaning attempt to use this kind of short-term event to jumpstart those local economies. But the inability of the city and the 2016 committee to really engage with these communities, if anything, built more distrust over the proposal than support for it. And so you see on the one hand a civic leadership which really is trying to think in terms of the entire city, try to use a particular kind of event for economic development, but from the standpoint of actually consulting with those communities and convincing people that there was going to be something desirable and permanent that would be the outgrowth of this, I think that it was a pretty unsuccessful process of communication. And certainly one of the ways in which I think Chicago really needs to work on creating more of a sense of an entire city or a city within a coherent region is in terms of public consultation. And this is something that the Richard M. Daley administration has never been particularly good at. In fact, historically, this hasn't worked very well in Chicago other than through the old ward organization structure of the Democratic Party. And I think it's going to be one of Rahm Emanuel's biggest challenges. Is he going to be able to get past that hurdle and become a mayor who is really viewed as responding to the entire city?
Laura, is that or has that been the Chicago model here? If you brought the Olympics, I mean, there was this kind of sense that you would sort of roll over these great big neighborhoods, sort of, you know, I don't know, a kind of new urban renewal. Well, you use the Olympics to sort of rebuild everything, and that didn't go down necessarily so well, as Larry said. Is that the model? Is there a better model in Chicago?
Well, there hasn't been one put forward since the Olympics crashed. And in fact, other initiatives that the mayor has put forward have, and many people believe, have contributed even more to the decline of these communities. For example, the dismantling of public housing, the transformation of public housing, is the mayor likes to term it, where this administration demolished, you know, dozens of very difficult and challenging high-rise communities on this, mainly on the south side of Chicago. But at the time that initiative rolled out 4 or 5 years ago was right around the time that the economy was crashing. So there was a major plan to redevelop those communities as mixed-income communities and incorporate many of the lower-income families who had been in the high-rises into these communities along with middle and upper-middle-income families. But because the economy crashed, many of the developers who had been lined up to do these developments either pulled out or went out of business themselves. So you had these vast swaths of empty land in these communities that have not been replaced with not only any housing, but without any economic development. And many of the low-income, the poorest families in the city have now been dispersed into other communities. And many people feel that crime rates and other local ills, economic ills that have developed in those communities have happened as a result of this. So again, the mayor is leaving at a critical time in terms of community development or lack of community development. And I think that Larry Bennett is right, is that the approach has always been very much top-down, downtown-centric. And I think that's because the mayor has been politically afraid of reaching out to neighborhoods and empowering neighborhoods that then could politically organize against him. So I think it remains a challenge for Rahm Emanuel. One of the things that I've been impressed with that he has done is that he has done more than just talk about community development. He's hit L stops, he's hit bus stops, he's hit neighborhood restaurants over and over and over again during his campaign. The morning after his campaign, the first stop he made was at 95th and the Dan Ryan, which is the local transportation hub, an entryway to the south side of Chicago. That's a good sign, but those are still symbols at this point.
We've seen the news just last week. Chicago's overall population down more than 200,000 since 2000, 6.9% decline, and a 17% decline in the black population. I guess some of those people being dispersed right out of the city, Laura, into suburbs, as that housing's gone away.
And I think most of those folks are not, the lower-income residents of the city have been dispersed probably to other neighborhoods. They're not in a position to move to wealthier suburbs. So I think most of the folks that have left have been middle-class, upper-middle-class African-Americans who've gone either to the south suburbs or there's been a bit of a reverse migration. Some of those folks have gone to the south. And that's something that should be of great concern, because I think that signals perhaps a little bit of an erosion of the black middle class.
Laura Washington, Larry Bennett, please stand by. Let me bring our listeners in here, if I may. Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Mark is on the line. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Thanks for calling. Mark, are you there, my friend? All right, let's get another right here from Amesbury, Massachusetts. Diane. Hi, Diane. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
I am a transplanted Chicagoan. I've been all over the place, Detroit, South Africa, and now Boston.
Yes, you have been all over.
I think it's the greatest. I have. But I was with some, married for a long time to somebody who was a Newsweek reporter. He absolutely loves Chicago. Everywhere I've been, everyone says they love it, but I don't think it's the city that works right now.
Why not?
Definitely. You know what? My grandmother was one of the first people in Cabrini Green. Can you imagine that in the early 1960s?
In the housing project in Cabrini Green?
Yes.
Okay.
When it was for seniors and displaced Chicagoans,
yeah,
way before all the problems came. And, of course, I watched it decline. And then finally we moved her to another senior project that was more in the city on Noble, which was wonderful. But
and now it's gone. Cabrini Green basically gone, right?
Gone. Yeah. I'm absolutely stunned by it. But I do see when I come parachute in for visits, I do see the disparity between driving downtown, even on the Kennedy from my, you know, family's nice place up north,
mm-hmm,
into the city. I think, where is that city that works? Where's the city of the big shoulders? I'm concerned about it, and I remember my family saying, Diane, the Olympics? Are you kidding? We'll end up like Montreal. And I didn't realize how bad the financial situation was in Chicago until I heard that from my family. But the thing I want to say is everyone I ever speak to worldwide loves Chicago, but Chicago's got to work better than Michigan Avenue. We can't just have Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, the Golden Mile is very impressive. Diane, thanks for your call. Larry Bennett, what do you say in response to that? I mean, you're describing a city that does work, but without the big shoulders. Diane's not necessarily persuaded that works for everybody.
Well, I agree with Diane. I think the most striking attribute of contemporary Chicago is the fact that it is a divided city in ways that Laura has been describing, mm-hmm, and as our caller did. And I suppose that the way that I would put the approach to redevelopment and improving the city that has been characteristic of the Richard M. Daley period is it's a view that the city can be reclaimed through gentrification. And so what you have is a process of residential neighborhoods to the west and to the south side of the loop getting new investment. On the south side in particular, there has been quite a bit of African-American gentrification of, mm-hmm, neighborhoods,
yep,
like North Kenwood and Oakland. And the problem with that model is that it provides space for new middle-class and newly prospering individuals and families who are connected to the downtown economy or to some of the other growth sectors in the economy. But within those neighborhoods that are gentrifying or beyond the perimeter of those neighborhoods, the direct benefits are pretty limited. And in some cases, there are costs exacted by the preference for charter schools as opposed to traditional neighborhood elementary and high schools. And as Laura was saying with regard to the transformation of the Chicago Housing Authority, there has been the elimination of a lot of high-rise buildings, which were not good places to live. But the replacement model, which is essentially oriented towards using private investment to generate new housing, which is going to include a component of public housing, affordable housing, and market rate housing, that has really been stalled by the economy. And so one of the things we're seeing in Chicago is something that we're seeing across the United States, including at the national level, which is that government is withdrawing from traditional functions. And in so doing, it is sometimes a process which produces more of a reliance on community organizations and what we call civil society. And in some respects, I think that that's a good thing. I think that the Chicago Housing Authority was not a good agency for providing affordable housing. We have lots of nonprofit organizations that now do that in Chicago. And in many ways, they can do that in a more humane fashion. But this process of transforming the city is very uneven. There are sections of the city that have changed dramatically. There are other sections of the city that have not been affected very much or, if you will, have been left behind. And I think that we see this particularly during this time of recession because even the kind of service sector jobs that were part of the economic growth of Chicago 10 years ago have disappeared.
Larry Bennett, please stand by. And Laura Washington, we're looking at Chicago as Rahm Emanuel lines up to take over. Here's Juke That Girl, DJ Gantman, big in Chicago right now, the sound. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Rahm Emanuel's Chicago, the city he will anyway inherit from sitting Mayor Richard M. Daley. Laura Washington is with us from the Chicago Sun-Times. Larry Bennett's here from DePaul University in Chicago. He's author of The Third City, Chicago and American Urbanism. Let's get a call from Nashville. Carl's on the line. Hi, Carl. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? I tell you, I have a wonderful story for you all.
Okay.
I'm glad that you all mentioned something about people moving to the South. My father is originally from Nashville, Tennessee. He moved to Chicago years ago, met my mother, married.
All right.
And in 84, the schools went on strike. I got sick of that, and I stayed. We were here for Thanksgiving visiting my grandparents. I stayed. And the only way you can get me back in Chicago is if you melt me down and pour me there. Closest I want to get back is WGN News, watching on television. Chicago,
why?
I love Chicago, but Chicago don't seem to love me back. So me and my wife and our middle-class family stay here here in the South because that's the only way we can make it. We couldn't live comfortably in Chicago.
Why not, Carl? Why not? Why not?
Because if you would go to the south side of Chicago in the inner city or the west side of Chicago, then you would never have to ask me that question, why not? It's self-explanatory. I love Chicago. Chicago don't always love me. That's why I live in probably one of the reddest states. I'm probably as liberal as they come, but I live in one of the reddest states and probably will continue to stay here and would never move back to Chicago, Illinois, just because of that fact.
But is it housing? Is it jobs? Is it all of the above?
It's housing. It's jobs. It's equality. Everything. Everything about that city is unequal to me.
Carl?
It always has been, always will be, but it's something that we tiptoe around, and I think we need to run head forward into it. Maybe Rahm Emanuel will take care of that, maybe not, but I don't look forward to that day. That's why I'm here in Nashville, Tennessee.
Carl, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Let me hold that right there and get one more on Chicago here from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Thank you, Carl. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know? What do you think of Chicago?
Well, I like to be a little bit more optimistic. Quickly, I grew up in Cabrini Green. I lived there when Mayor Jane Byrne was mayor. I lived there when Harold Washington was mayor, and I lived there when Mayor Daley became mayor. I went to a private school, the University of Chicago Laboratory Schools on the South Side,
yep.
And I love the city. I understand there are issues there, but part of what makes city Chicago works are that people are willing to give up a lot to live there. And that's why I love living there.
Mark, may I ask you, do you love it as a white man, as a black man, what?
I love it as a black man. I grew up in Cabrini Green, so...
So when Carl says, you know, Chicago just feels unequal to him and he doesn't want to go back, how do you understand that?
Maybe he's not a true Chicagoan.
A lot
of people live there and a lot of people struggle, but every day people make that city work. And I understand that city has issues. Every city does.
Yeah.
I gave up a lot, or my family gave up a lot to live there, and they continue to live there this day. And sometimes you just have to wake up tomorrow to a better day and hope that things are going to get better. But there's no city like it. I was in New York City, didn't like it. I was in L.A., didn't like it. You know, when I was a kid, I used to sneak to the top of the Civic Opera House
yeah.
at night to listen to opera. I don't think you can find that in a lot of places. And, you know, I just loved it there.
But Mark, we've got it, and I appreciate your call as well. All right, Laura Washington, what do you make of these two perspectives on your city? There in Carl and Mark just coming in, you know, two diametrically opposed views of the same place.
I think they're both correct. I think as a lifelong Chicagoan, as someone who wanted to make sure I was out of town, but made sure I was back in Chicago for that blizzard because I wanted to show how the blizzard we had about a month ago, there were 20 inches or plus of snow.
Yeah.
I wanted to show that I had what it takes. I think Chicago is a tough city, and we're very proud of that, but it is a tough city to live in, as Carl pointed out. Mark went to he was lucky enough to go to a private school.
Right.
Unfortunately, most African Americans and Latinos and other, you know, working class or lower income families don't necessarily have that option. and the school system has not delivered as it should have. So one reason you have the out-migration is that people are just looking for better educational options. The crime, the economic development, there's business strips on the south side and the west side that have not changed in terms of the composition of the businesses that exist, in terms of the opportunities for jobs. Those business strips are the same as they were 30 years ago. And the city continues to be economically and racially segregated. So if you live in one of those communities, it's just a much tougher road to hold to stay in a city that you love.
Describe that segregation. Is it mainly residential segregation? Does the city integrate during working hours in workplaces? Is that the segregation today in Chicago, Laura?
The city is integrated downtown during working hours, 9 to 5. But if you go into many watering holes, restaurants, salons, in the evenings, predominantly white, predominantly middle and upper middle class, there's very few neighborhoods, Hyde Park being a notable exception, that are truly integrated both racially and economically. Part of that, frankly, is preference. I think that African Americans in Chicago and many other cities gave up on this ideal that integration was the root of all their problems. So there are middle income communities, Black African American communities throughout the South Side of Chicago, but they are fewer and far between.
Let me get a call from Chicago. Megan's on the line. Hi, Megan. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
What do you know, Megan?
Well, I wanted to talk about kind of a positive aspect, something that I'm doing in my work as an educational coordinator. One of the programs that we run is called Exchange Neighborhoods. It's through Hosteling International Chicago. And the idea is to combat the kind of cultural isolation experienced by high school students in their schools. You've been talking about segregation, and just the isolation that students experience is really profound. And most students go to schools where it's 80-90% of one ethnic background.
Okay.
So what our program does is pairs two different high schools, say one from a mostly African-American school and one from a Latino school, and teach them individually in their classrooms about culture and how to respect culture and how to talk about who they are and what their culture is to someone of a different background.
Do the students, do their parents go for this? Are they enthusiastic about it or skeptical?
Absolutely. They are a little bit apprehensive at first just because they have a lot of misperceptions and stereotypes about students in other parts of the city. But then what we do is actually bring the two schools together on an exchange day. And it's an all-day event where the kids actually have a coach bus and visit each other's schools, talk about each other's cultures, tour each other's schools, do team building work, tour each other's neighborhoods. And then the program culminates at the hostel downtown where it's neutral ground. Nobody's a host, nobody's a guest.
Yeah.
Everybody's the same there. And they cook together, they eat together, they spend the night in our shared accommodation, and by the following morning, when we do reflection, they're like, wow, I didn't realize that someone who's different than me, who has a different skin type, can actually be the same.
Megan, we've got it, and it is optimistic. At the same time, it's kind of rivetingly fascinating that the students are tourists in each other's neighborhoods in the same city. It's kind of compelling on both fronts. Larry, here's a comment from the website from Jim, who says, Chicago, cameras everywhere, police city on the lake. What about that, the sort of that end of the reputation, police city?
Well, one of the ideas that Mayor Daley has pushed pretty vigorously is the use of surveillance cameras around the city. And I think that what animated this from his standpoint was that there was this emergent technology that would allow better scrutiny of what was going on in public places. There are cities in other parts of the world that have really been the pioneers in this. I think London probably has 10 times as many surveillance cameras as Chicago, but London is viewed as one of these places that it's worthy to emulate. And I think that for many Chicagoans, it's a sort of odd part of the physical landscape now. You are aware of them. Most of us don't pay very much attention to them because, contrary to rumor, most Chicagoans are actually quite law-abiding, and none of us – well, I shouldn't say none of us. Most of us haven't murdered anyone
lately
in the course of our lives. Mm-hmm. But you also get a sense sometime that Mayor Daley bordered on paranoid in terms of trying to turn around the image of the city. And whether these cameras are actually helpful or not, I'm not quite sure. the city's overall crime profile has actually been reduced in the last few years. That's very uneven, though. There are certain sections of the city where I think that that violence is an everyday part of life, and these are neighborhoods in which people have good reason to be fearful about break-ins and about street crime. But again, I think it speaks to the way in which the current mayor has attempted to basically create a new kind of Chicago. But if you will, Tom, I'd like to go back to the three callers' comments. Megan, I think, is exemplary of something that you see so frequently in Chicago, people who are committed to the city and who are engaged in innovative projects of one type or another, of neighborhood development, of cross-neighborhood or cross-racial understanding. I spoke to a group of public allies, young people, on Friday. These are college students, for the most part, who are interning with community-based organizations around the city. I gave them a fairly critical take on contemporary Chicago, but this is the best audience I've ever had as a public speaker. I mean, they were really deeply involved in the work that they're doing and what they're learning in these communities. And this has to be a positive attribute of the city, and it's a very exciting thing to see. Then we have Carl and Mark calling in. And the thing that I think is striking about their comments is this, and I'll illustrate it with a personal vignette. I was interviewing residents in the Cabrini Green development in the mid-1990s. Okay. And at this point, the proposal for demolishing the high-rises had been floated, and it was uncertain what the future of the neighborhood was going to be. And you would go into some of the buildings, and they were pretty disastrous places, pretty frightening places in terms of poor maintenance and so on. And I would interview people who would say, well, I've lived here all my life. I like the community, and there are so many assets to living in Cabrini Green, because Cabrini Green is just north of the River North area, just west of what's called the Gold Coast. It's close to the lake.
Disastrous in itself, but near the lakeshore.
And these mothers and their kids in some cases would talk to me about how great it was to be able to go over to Lake Michigan during the summer or to walk over to Michigan Avenue. They were living in what was viewed as a very bad public housing development, but they were surrounded by neighborhoods that they found a lot of opportunities in.
And still, you wouldn't have wanted to live there. Carl didn't either.
No, but the Carl calling from the South Side, I think, is referencing neighborhoods like West Inglewood, or if he had been speaking to the West Side, North Lawndale, areas that have lost 50% or 70% of their population over the last 50 years, areas that have literally emptied out.
Yeah.
And there, the kind of opportunity that these Cabrini Green residents saw in their near surroundings just aren't present. Mm. And so I think that one of the ways in which we have a hard time wrapping our head around Chicago or some other cities in the United States is that we have neighborhoods in Chicago and in Detroit, for example, probably in greater number, which aren't actually very urban anymore. They are within the physical limits of a city, but they are so depopulated, they have lost so much of their local retail, there are so few job opportunities, that in effect people aren't really living in the kind of urban environment that most of us appreciate, the thing that makes us love cities.
Yeah. Laurel, I got to come to you on the finance front. Mayor Daley privatized a lot of things, even parking meter receipts for generations, I think, in Chicago. And took that money and spent a lot of it. He built this amazing facade of Chicago in the now what we look back on as a period of famously easy money. What does Rahm Emanuel do with this great big deficit? We've got a comment from New York, that first city by its own estimation anyway, saying Rahm may soon come to the long, for the tranquil days as chief of staff is based on the fiscal condition of Chicago. He may quickly become as unpopular with union activists as Governor Walker in Wisconsin, Chris Christie in New Jersey, Andrew Cuomo in New York. What's he up against, Laurel? What can he do with that?
I think he's already there in terms of the union activists. Most of the major unions in the city either did not endorse at all in the mayor's race or endorsed his opponents. His message has been loud and clear. He hasn't offered much in the way of concrete solutions to this incredible budget deficit, the $600 million plus deficit. He has talked a little bit about finding funds through the what we call our tax increment finance, TIF program, which reserves tax receipts for certain economic development projects. He's talked about maybe using some of the TIF money to buy more police officers, but other than that, he's been very silent on the dollars. I think he's talked about a relatively minor luxury tax that he'd like to impose on things like, you know, limo services, health clubs, that kind of thing. But that's not big money. But what his message, loud and clear, has been it's about sacrifice and partnership. He's saying to the unions, he's saying to the corporate community, he's saying to philanthropy, he's saying to academia, I need your help, I need your ideas, I need you to come to the table with me to help solve these problems. And I think he's going to be looking for bucks and for resources, financial resources from all of those entities. And I think he's also talking about things like personal responsibility. He's talking to folks in the schools, not only the teachers, but also parents, about getting more engaged in public education, about looking for solutions to the problems, about, you know, getting citizens involved. And that philosophy, I think he would see that as a way of generating money. But I think one thing you're going to see for sure is a real hard look at pensions, at government pensions, and he's going to be asking for givebacks on the pension front from city and state workers. He's going to be looking for major reductions in workforce, and that's one reasons why the unions are already ganging up on him.
Sounds like Larry Bennett could be rough times, hot times in the neo-romantic metropolis there, Larry.
Yes, I think we've been condemned to live through interesting times.
Yeah. Wow. And off Rahm Emanuel goes soon when Richard M. Daley moves out. Larry Bennett, author of The Third City, there at DePaul University in Chicago. Larry, thank you very much for your insights today. Thank you for joining us.
It's been a pleasure, Tom.
And Laura Washington at the Chicago Sun-Times, always great to have you with us. Thank you for joining us, Laura.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Good luck, Chicago. This is On Point.
That's your bottom dollar. You lose the blues in Chicago. Chicago, the town that Billy Sunday could not shut down. State Street, that great street, I just want to say, they do things that they never do on Broadway. Say, they have the time of their life. I saw a man and he danced with his wife in Chicago, Chicago.